Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Laundry is going. People will be excited to know the laundry is going.
All hail Laundromat.
What? Cal Endar's lifelong companion, Laundromat. Hey, you posted an interesting link today on Six Colors.
Yeah, you know what? No, even, you know, it's funny. I thought back as I was fixing that to all the times I got like super anxious about misposting stuff on Macworld, which we all did from
sure.
time to time.
It happens. It happens, yeah.
And these days, how much more? I'm like, I'll fix it. No big deal.
Yeah. Yeah, you posted
less anxiety
a URL to an Apple Tech note as the headline of your link to your Macworld piece, just for those who missed it.
Yeah, I had been, a friend was asking about iPhone buying advice and about AppleCare, and so I was posting a link to them. It's just one of those cases where I, you know, it's funny. I pasted that link into the external link field, and I was like, oh, gotcha, and then pasted the right Macworld link, and somehow it ended up in the title field. I'm still not clear how that happened.
It's funny how that, it's funny. It was your 100th Macworld column, too. 200th Macworld column. That's right.
Because it's
4 years, basically, of writing that Macworld column. And I imagine that means that I broke 200 a couple of months ago, because I think I started a couple of months before you doing the weekly Macworld column thing.
It's actually relatively difficult to figure out based on the access we have.
Yeah, I look at the some of those templates on Macworld, and I know who built them, and I know that they haven't worked there in 5 years or 4 years. Yep. I'm like, all right, well, it's still there. But what can I say? The site still operates, and they still pay us, and so we still write there weekly. And I'll just say it again. I felt it incredibly burdensome to have to write a column in Macworld once a month back in the day, and now we do. You and I both have to do it every single week, and somehow we've managed to come up with between us 400 different, well, not different, 400 columns. I repeat a lot. I did my Macworld column this week was iOS 13 things I'd like to see, and next week, guess what? It's going to be macOS things I want to see. And right. I recycle those every year.
Yeah, and this week I did the things that you shouldn't expect to see at WWDC, and next week I'll do the things you should expect to see.
Well, that's how you get to 52. I remember, what was it? I tell this story every now and then. David Pogue used to say how, you know, doing 12 columns a year, that he had like 8 good ones, and then 4 were like, meh. And I think... I think, boy, 52 columns a year.
So he thinks he's got a 66% success rate. Let me see. How many good columns would that mean?
Fortunately, the Tom's Guide thing that I write every other week, Phil Michaels, usually has a suggestion for me about what to write about. That's so great. Because it's I'll do that. Okay. It's like, oh, you got it.
Yeah. Everyone feels there's a point in your life where you start, like, there's a tipping point where when once you had more ideas than time, now I feel like I have more time than ideas.
Yeah, it's funny how that works. It is on us now, right? WWDC, just a little more than a week away.
Imminent.
Yeah, it's going to be huge. I think it's going to be huge. I really do.
I agree.
I think it's going to have the most stuff in it since... I don't know, sometime very early in the OS X transition, probably, or like the Intel transition, something like that. It feels that huge to me.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is we've been talking about this for several months, but I think it is a pivot point. And I think we're going to see a lot of both stuff that I think, I'm not even sure that much about the stuff that's consumer facing. Like even that, I feel less sure about what is going to be in there than I do about sort of the large-scale changes to the platforms that are going to primarily impact developers and then kind of trickle down to us. But even that, like that on its own, right? You know, most of the time when Apple introduces like changes to its APIs or things for developers, you know, most of the consumers are like, okay, sure, whatever. And like you get a couple good, you know, pieces pointing out like, oh, here's what these things enable. And you're like, oh, well, that could be useful when people write apps that take advantage of it. But this year, I think we are really expecting to see kind of a fundamental shift in the way that Apple is handling its software platforms. And I think that will come to play relatively quickly.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be huge. I hope that you and I will do our now traditional secret podcast live from the outside. And if we do plan it well enough in advance, I will post something in the announcements channel of the Six Colors membership Slack announcing where we will be so that we can have a live sidewalk audience for the secret podcast.
Wow, that will be a first. I don't think anybody has ever... I'm trying to think. We've had people come into our respective offices while we're recording this. I'm not sure if we ever had... Maybe once we recorded something in like a hotel room at WWC and someone was there. I don't even remember. But like, I don't think we've had an audience per se.
Well, we did hear when we did that one on the benches that people were walking by realizing that it was us doing a podcast.
Right, but they weren't there for that purpose.
I think they continued on with their business, too. Yes. They didn't stay. They're just like, hey, it's Dan and Jason. I'm going to go do something more interesting than that.
Yeah, well. But blame for that.
We'll see. We'll see how that goes. I don't know. MacBook Pro and keyboards news this week, which is interesting because that is part of the pre-WWDC dump, I would say, where they want to get this news out so there's not discussion or speculation about it for the event itself. They've just kind of like, you put it out now, and so it's faster. It's a pretty good update to the 15-inch MacBook Pro, actually, because these are the 9th-gen Intel processors. You can get an 8-core MacBook Pro, which is pretty awesome, actually, in terms of people who want to do pro-level work on a laptop. That is a big boost for developers, really, especially. But they knew it. That conversation that I had that was on background, so I'm not supposed to like use it as a direct quote or anything and only attribute it to Apple information and things like that. But suffice it to say that, you know, they dropped the news about the laptops and then said, all right, let's talk about that keyboard now.
Well, I mean, the keyboard thing is interesting because, one, as you point out, like they know it's an issue. And I want to even step back from that because I've heard plenty of people, yourself included, I think, who have pointed out, I've got one or more of these keyboards on devices in my house, and they're fine. And I think ultimately the sad part about that is it doesn't matter because
perception is reality.
There's so much optics about this being bad that at some point they'll have to redesign it. At this point, it's irrelevant whether or not it's good. And I think that, you know, it's good that they're making changes. I think the biggest improvement to come out of that is not so much the new materials in the new version of the keyboard, but the fact that they're extending their keyboard repair program to cover all of these because, you know, some are getting broken and they should be covered. I think that's kind of the minimum is if this breaks in a way that seems like it shouldn't, then you should probably fix it.
It shouldn't feel like you're rolling the dice about buying a laptop. I get it. I get that some people don't like the keyboard. I don't really like the keyboard. I get that some people don't want to have the prospect of it having to be repaired, especially if you're somebody who doesn't live near a place like an Apple store or an authorized repair, you know, person who can do that repair. It's a huge hassle for somebody like me who's 5 minutes from the Apple store. It's not a huge hassle. It's a hassle, but not a huge hassle. But
also if it's your only Mac too, right? Like that's the other issue. And they're improving that, but yeah.
But that all said, like, I do think it's a good move. I mean, clearly they are incapable of replacing this keyboard. They're going to need a new design to replace this keyboard.
And
I think I said on download this week, they know this is a bad keyboard. Like they've known that for years. The problem is that these laptop design families have a life and you kind of have to, you know, and it takes a long time to get around it. And maybe that's something that if I was in hardware design at Apple on the Mac side, I think maybe I would have a longer conversation about how we should change our processes so that if something like this keyboard thing happens, enjoy the spinning of my laundry in the background, by the way, that we can turn faster. But, you know, it is what it is. They know it. They obviously have been trying to fix it for like four different revisions now, and they've got it. Maybe they do. And we thought maybe they did last time, and they didn't. This is the first time I think they've talked about making a change specifically to address this issue that people are talking about. So
as opposed to just we improved it because we can. Yeah,
they say that this is a significant reduction in the incidence of that. They also talk about how it's the vast majority of people don't have it, but remains to be seen in real world conditions whether that's true or not. I do think it's a big thing for them to just say, look, if you've got one of these, it's covered. I know that's not going to solve it for everybody because of the hassle thing, but being able to stand behind it and say, look, we are extending this program to everybody, so you can rest assured that we will fix this problem if it continues. The problem is that it's still only a 4-year program. So you buy this laptop and that's great, but if you're depending on resale value or you're depending on using it for 6 or 7 years, after 4 years, you're going to have a 4-year-old laptop, and if the keyboard breaks, too bad, you'll have to pay to get it. And that is
or they'll have to extend it again at that point.
Or they'll have to extend it again. I mean, those MacBooks are now out. Right. If you bought a first MacBook when they came out, they are now out of this program because it's a 4-year program. And that was from 2015. So I don't know. If I had to make a prediction, it would be that this actually will fix it. And that's great if you buy one of these or if you buy the 2018 model. It's not as confusing when you dig down. It's not as confusing as you might think, because the new keyboard iterations seem to be by year. So if you have a 2018 and you need it to get it repaired, it will be replaced with a 2019 keyboard. 2019's got the new keyboard, and the older models, 15, 16, 17 don't. And they're still under this program, but they won't get the new hardware, the new material that's being used. So it's still kind of a mess. At least Apple has extended that warranty. Everybody is waiting for the next thing. I kind of want to make a prediction that this is the last update to the existing entire design. Like I think I would probably bet that these are the last new laptops with the butterfly keyboard.
I think that's a pretty sound bet. I think that at this point, once you've done it 4 times, it's, plus, 4 or 5 years is about the time that you expect for a redesign.
And there are rumors about a new MacBook out there, that 16-inch MacBook Pro, that is... I'm going to say it. I think... Somebody with Gruber this week quoted somebody or last week as saying somebody at Apple is saying they took their eye off the ball regarding the Mac. I think laptops are so important that I don't think Apple, if Apple is serious about the Mac, I don't think Apple can afford to have a product design family that goes 4 years. I think the cycle is too long. That if you look at some of their competitors, their competitors are much more aggressive at building new laptops. And Apple's laptops, when they first ship, are very impressive. But 4 years later, they are old and kind of, crappy looking.
And that's a pattern that is evident throughout Apple's treatment of the Mac, even though, as you point out, the laptops are certainly the most important part of that because most Macs are laptops.
Yeah.
But the Mac Mini sat around without an update for many years. The Mac Pro is its own story.
Yeah.
The iMac gets a relatively decent amount of attention for a Mac. I think shows you that it's something. It's also one place where Apple does not have a lot of competition within itself, right? Because the laptops, well, they're very popular. People have been moving to iPads. Some people will choose to buy an iPad instead of a laptop. I think there's a lot more options if you're looking for a mobile computing device. If you're looking for a big screen device to do work on, your option is the iMac. There's really nothing else. Mm.
Yeah, it's a not yet. But I don't know. I'm struck as a part of this by the fact that this is a 2016 product design and it's 2019. The keyboard is from 2015, but these MacBook Pros came out in 2016. It's like, okay, it's only been, it's been less than 3 years, but it feels like it's time to move on. It feels like Apple has, in the interim, taken the iPad and the iPhone and pulled in the bezels and made either smaller or bigger screened devices, right? And then there are these MacBooks that are, it's time, right? It's time for them to get that tighter, more modern design, and I think they will. I think it's just one of those things that I'm. It's time. It's feeling like the clock is ticking. I'm ready for the next thing now.
The big question mark for me, especially, is the MacBook, which has not been updated since 2017.
Right,
debuted in 15. It got a revamp basically every year since it's. Except for last year. And which is interesting because it is a computer that I think has a lot of appeal to it, but had some definite shortcomings in terms of what it was offering. And it's now even more because it's 2 years old now.
Yeah.
Unlike those Pros, which just got a bump, the MacBook is very much not competitive with the current level of computers. And it's also, I think there's some struggle in there too because of the introduction of the MacBook Air. It means that the MacBook gets sort of, you know, edged out a little bit. It's still got a place there, I think, and I'm interested in it as a super lightweight, small computer.
Sure.
But it's well underpowered, and it seems like it's just not, you know, where's the attention?
Yeah.
I feel like, it feels like there's a shoe left to drop there.
I don't know if Intel, because I don't have the Intel processor grid memorized or have even looked at it, but I don't know if there's like a new Intel processor of the class of what's in the MacBook that should be in there, and why is it not? Or if, like, because of the thermal characteristics, because there's no fan and all that, if they're just kind of like boxed in and this is what they can offer. It does feel to me like the MacBook, the gut feeling is they would have done a perfunctory speed bump if there weren't other plans for it.
Yes.
Now,
exactly.
I feel like we're getting, you know, and maybe this fall they will announce a new MacBook bump, and they'll go into the holiday season with a new MacBook bump and maybe a MacBook Air bump, and we'll just go from there. But, It the longer we wait, the more convinced I am that the MacBook will be getting a redesign, and it will be the first ARM Mac, right?
Yep. I 100% agree with that. I think that's, it feels, again, that's a gut feeling. It feels like, why would you spend this amount of time speed bumping something when it's very clear that your roadmap is heading away from that direction.
Right.
It
and it's
feels
designed,
like you're taking a weird fork.
It's designed like an iPad. It is very clearly the perfect system to put an ARM processor in and run an ARM version of Mac OS. And I wonder about that, because that would be very interesting. That would be also, in the short term, a differentiator over something like the MacBook Air, where they would say,
absolutely,
well, this is smaller and it runs our ARM processor, so it gets 20 hours of battery life. And, you know, they'd be like, wow, okay, this is interesting.
That's pretty compelling.
Yeah, and all these Marzipan apps are already compiled for ARM, so it's fine.
Yep.
I don't know. But this is the challenge, right, is we're in this transitional era now. We're coming into it. And we don't know, like, Apple has had to set down a product roadmap, and there are a bunch of different ways that they could go. How do they roll all this stuff out? But, so we have to guess, because there are so many different paths they could take. But the MacBook is definitely, the one that's just kind of laying there as, this would be an obvious ARM Mac, and the longer that you don't update it, the more I think that that's what you're going to do.
Right,
because
right,
it would be pretty great, I think.
Yeah, I think that'd be a great device, and I think, you know, that at this point, given everything we've seen over the last 6 months to a year, you know, the idea that transition is not happening, it seems ridiculous, right? Like, it feels that it's just a question of when, not a question of if.
After they threw Intel under the bus in their quarterlies, especially.
Yep.
but yeah, the MacBook, there's a whole list. Like the iPad Pro announcement, where they talked about how it's faster than 90% of laptops.
Yep.
That's them saying, we can already build a processor that's better than a laptop processor. So why, really, it's almost like, why haven't you done this yet? if all, I mean, and I'll grant
you that, the software.
That like 15-inch MacBook Pro with the i9 has a lot better performance than an iPad Pro. I'll grant you that. But like, if what you're saying is we have built a processor that's better than the processor in all but our highest end Pro laptops, my response is going to be, why isn't it in all the rest of your laptops then, right? Why isn't it in these others? And I know there's a software issue and there's an OS transition and a chip transition and all, you know, a third party app transition that needs to happen. But it does, it feels like they're there, right? Like maybe the current iPad Pro processor is the like laying the groundwork because it's basically a laptop class and they wanted to do that and then the next one will actually be in a laptop. I don't know.
Yeah, I think we're in for this period of bifurcation where we're going to have the Intel Macs and the ARM Macs sitting aside one another for different things for a little while, because like you said, some of those high-end ones are not necessarily going to have ARM processors that are competitive
immediately. And if it's a huge amount of work to go to ARM on the Mac, then this is going to be a more complex story. But if it's not, if they've got, you know, a new version of Xcode and they've got compilers that will let you fairly easily just, as a Mac developer, just target ARM and you're done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then it's not that big a deal to have a mixed platform.
Right. And that's kind of why it feels like they haven't done it yet, is because they haven't made that announcement.
Right. Although, again, that's one of those things that they could announce at WWDC.
Right. Exactly.
They could.
Yeah, is that how many shoes are hitting the floor at WWDC? I think that's the question.
That is why I think they probably won't. Actually, I would, if I were betting about this, and I don't bet, although I do draft competitively about WWDC announcements, I would say that Marzipan is enough for this year, and that ARM will either come in 6 months, not at WWDC, where there'll just be an announcement. And which they totally could do, right? They could announce ARM laptops and, as a part of that, roll out a whole bunch of stuff in the developer center and a new version of Xcode and basically say, check this box. And they could do that. They don't actually need, if it's not going to be an enormous technical issue, they could do that. Again, my gut feeling is that we're probably one step away from that still, that the A12X Bionic that's in the iPad Pro is laying the groundwork for an ARM Mac processor, but that it probably isn't the ARM Mac processor, and that it'll be one step. It'll be an A13. I'm warming up to calling it the A13M. That it's the Mac version. It could also just be the A13X, right? Like literally the same chip that's in the iPad Pro is in a MacBook. And let me tell you, the MacBook with the power of an iPad Pro would be a huge step up for the MacBook. Huge, huge, because it's not that powerful a processor in there. So I don't know. Anything could happen, though. That's the amazing thing, is that Apple could get on stage on, on June, whatever it is, 3rd, and say, ARM, here it is. There's going to be a new ARM MacBook, and in the meantime, you can use your iPad Pro. We install macOS on it. I don't know.
Right.
They could do that. That would be wild, but they could.
something mysterious.
But I feel like Marzipan is going to be enough of a thing. Then again, the Marzipan people are theoretically iOS people, whereas our Mac announcement is really more impacting the old school Mac developers who would have to do work to move their apps over.
Right.
I don't know, Dan. It's
exciting times. Thing.
It is. So there's a lot out there. There's a lot out there to think about. So anyway, I expect those keyboards aren't going to die, though. I think they're going to go.
None too soon.
I think Apple. Marco was saying that he's heard a rumor, and I hadn't seen this one. I don't think that 16-inch and whatever they're working on, the 16-inch and the 15-inch size is the rumor, that they're going to have scissor switches. It's going to be more like the Magic Keyboard. They're going to have the inverted T come back, and they're going to have a physical escape key next to the touch bar. And, you know, I can't tell whether that's a rumor or just a fever dream, because it sounds like essentially what everybody has said. It's like addressing all of the big complaints about this generation. And it's like, great. Let's great. That sounds great to me to build that keyboard.
Yeah, just I always worry about things that conform too much to the
exactly
I know, what everybody wants.
It sounds like wish casting, right? And not reality. Do you
right.
And you're still writing on a MacBook Air with the old keyboard, right?
I am.
Yeah.
It's getting longer and longer in the tooth. It's got I put a new battery in it, and the battery still wants to be serviced, even though it's working okay. And it's like, well, I'm wringing every last mile out of this device that I can.
Sure.
But a more substantive update cannot come soon enough for me.
Yeah. The new MacBook Air is nice. I will say
it's not quite the device I want, but it's like if this computer died tomorrow and I need to buy a new one, it would probably be that Air. But
yeah, that's my
ideally
my standard recommendation for people who are looking for a new laptop at this point is go on Amazon and wait for the Air to be $999 and buy it. That's
right.
That's it. I've done that twice now. that's I recommend it. I wrote a piece this week about how the lyrics thing in the music app is bad.
Yeah. Yep.
It is spectacular how like they're using these crowdsourced stuff instead of like official lyrics. Apparently there's no official lyrics database, I guess. I am surprised that somebody has in the music industry hasn't realized there's money to be made in compiling a centralized database of all of the song lyrics with the song, you know, writer's credits, and then giving them, you know, money in exchange for licensing that out to people like Apple and Spotify so that they can have official lyrics instead of the crowdsourced lyrics that are just laughably wrong at times. Because I do pop open the lyrics panel or, you know, area in the music app every now and then to say, did I hear that right or whatever? And then sometimes I look and I think, oh my God, they got that totally wrong. And a lot of times it's the context where there's just like a reference to something that the 14-year-old kid who put the lyrics in, because they're a big fan, they don't know that that's a reference to some brand that doesn't exist anymore, but that their musical idol knows and they don't. But I feel like it reflects badly on Apple's product, though, because they've got these bad lyrics. Anyway, I wrote that article, and now there's a bunch of music that doesn't have lyrics at all. And I think Apple's lyrics are mad at me.
That makes sense. That seems like what they do.
Get Jason's ID and just don't show him lyrics anymore. That'll solve that problem.
It's one of those things it's kind of a tough problem to solve in some ways, because you can't just do it by... is there really an automated way that would be better? You'd need to have somebody essentially transcribe them from the, like, aren't even liner notes. I don't know what I'm talking about.
But there
anymore.
Are, right, like, somewhere, lyrics, yes. Generally, there is a lyric
file.
Sheet or music that is copyrighted, and that is part of the rights. And I realize that money is going to motivate this, but if there was, and again, maybe there is, and they're not using it for some reason, I don't know, or maybe somebody tried and it failed, but it just strikes me that there's money to be made from things like Apple Music and Spotify in officially licensing the lyrics for display. There's some money to kick back to the songwriters. In exchange, somebody builds a database, a middleman, and they take some money for it. That is the official database of lyrics as verified by the the songwriters or whatever. But instead, we get these crowdsourced ones, which are great because fans are excited about it. But fans also like hideously mistake lyrics. And I would like, I want, and this is like Apple under Steve Jobs especially was so obsessed with like the music experience, right? Like album art and things like that, that they prioritize sometimes over sense. That didn't really make sense, but they prioritized it because it was the excitement of I don't even know the experience of music beyond just listening to the music, of having the art and having liner notes and things like that, that
right.
They did that extended albums thing that didn't work out and all that. And yet this is one of those areas where I feel like you could step up and say, we are working with the labels to provide this information source that will include verified lyrics as well as album credit information that will run, you know, that you can go to and see in Apple Music, and that as a result, you know, your people listening to music today are going to have the experience that you used to get when you bought a CD or a tape or an album, where you could look at the liner notes and discover who played bass on track three and all of that. Like, somebody, it feels like somebody could make a concerted effort here to improve the music experience,
right?
And nobody is, and not even Apple, which is, I don't know, it surprises me.
Although Apple does say, if you see inaccurate lyrics, you can send Apple Music feedback.
Yeah, I did that, and it just because it was hilarious, I put that in there, that like literally there is a page that says you can use Apple's support system to report an inaccurate lyric, which is amazing.
That's terrible. That's so bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact is, and I listen to some artists who clearly have a lot of really enthusiastic teenage fans, which is fine. As somebody in my 40s, I do listen to music that is done by younger artists and liked by younger people from time to time. And that's what really strikes me as a parent of two teenagers, is the enthusiasm coupled with a complete lack of reference that leads to hilariously misheard song lyrics, because they're artists that are in their 20s and maybe early 30s generally, they have more life experience, and these are songwriters. They've got, like, they've read a lot. They're making references to history or pop culture or things, and then we're having a bunch of 14-year-olds transcribe them, and they don't get it. And so you end up with these, like, hilariously misheard. There was one, I couldn't find it, I was going to use it in the story, that is basically, it's telling the story of somebody who's miserable and they're seeking solace in basically going down into the basement of a club where the music is really loud and it's a smoke-filled room, is in the lyrics. And it is mistranscribed as this bizarre, like, almost, I would say, almost mystical experience. And the best I can come up with is the person who transcribed it has never seen a smoke-filled room in a club, because they're too young. They're too young to have gone to a club, and they didn't live through an era where those kinds of enclosed spaces were completely filled with smoke. And so they have no context there. And I listen to the song and I'm like, wow, this is going to a dark place, and there's some imagery there. And then I look at the lyrics, I'm like, boop, boop,
yep.
Boop,
yep.
Boop.
Yeah,
adorable.
My favorite misheard lyric is always from Stayin' Alive by the Bee Gees, where I insist that there's a line where the singer says he has a weak old panda on his shoes.
Oh, man.
That's so good.
It's a very small panda.
Once you hear that, it's like, oh, man, it's like all I ever hear anymore. I know what the real line is, but it's not as interesting or bizarre.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good. I have a relative who thought that the Michael Jackson line was Billie Jean's not my mother.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Story checks out.
It's fine. That's fine.
But anyway, then it's an Apple interface in an app, and it's like, no, don't. Mm-mm, no. Nope. Don't. Nope. Don't do that. Don't do that. So anyway, they turned my lyrics off, is what I'm saying. Anything else we should talk about? Friday. Hey, calendar.
Yeah, I know.
Yay.
Do you want to talk briefly about Playdate?
Yeah, sure. Sure. Playdate from Panic. They're building a little gaming thingy.
It's super cool. I
agree.
Great that they're doing it, because we both know the Panic guys, and Cable and Steve Frank, like, it's always clear how passionate they are about all the projects that they do. And, Cable, especially, like, when I see him talk about games and game design, like, he is always so enthusiastic about it. And it's wild to produce a console, right? Like, even if it is just a small handheld little device, but, like, it's super cool that we are at a point where that is a feasible thing to do without being Sony or Microsoft or Nintendo, is to be like, yeah, well, make this console for playing games.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It seems really, really interesting. It's got that crank on it, which is kind of wild. It's got just new games delivered every week, you know.
Yeah, it's not just a $150 little game console that then you have to buy games for. It's a $150 little game console that comes with 12 games once a week, one a week for 12 weeks.
Yeah, I think that's, it's very clever. It's very them. It's very Panic. They've been dabbling in the game stuff for a while with, publishing Firewatch, and they've got another game coming out that they're publishing. And a lot of the people who work at Panic, I think, have games as a passion. You know,
for
Nevin
sure.
Morgan, who's done like a handful of different iOS games.
Right.
So it's clearly, it's baked in their DNA in a way that Apple used to say music was part of theirs. And so
I agree.
I feel like they're a company that gets games and gets what makes games interesting and appealing. And it's very cool that they're actually building a piece of hardware to do that.
Yeah. And I think what's funny is that we have indie games, but we don't have indie game hardware. Right.
Yeah.
And I've seen some, the negative judgments I've seen, which mostly have been like on Twitter or on game websites, is from people who can't get their heads around the idea that there could be a boutique indie game hardware device. Because
right.
their context is just, I mean, literally one person replied to Cable and said, I could just get a Game Boy emulator. It's like, okay, well,
yes, you could have
that's
fun.
that's not the point of this. And the context is like, well, it's not a Nintendo handheld, it's not a phone, it's this other thing. It's like, well, yes, it's meant to make you think about something like Game Boy, but it's also meant to be this little indie platform. It doesn't need to sell a million of them. They're not trying to sell a million of them. They probably couldn't make a million of them. Not the point, right? Just like an indie game is not the point. And I feel like it's a very similar thing where like an indie game, the point is not that it's not a console game, right? Like it's not trying to be a console game. It's
right.
It's this, if it delights a small number of people and makes money, then, and everybody's happy, it doesn't need to be more than that. And what's funny is I think the game world, which is kind of a microcosm of the internet, but worse, I would say, the game culture.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it's like concentrated internet, including all the badness gets concentrated. One of the things about the internet in general and about gaming in particular that really I loathe is the idea that if it's not for you, it's no good. And it's like the lack of empathy hits in a bunch of different areas, but I see it a lot where people look at something like the Playdate and they're like, I'm not interested. This is stupid. It's like, you know what? You not being interested in it says nothing about whether it's good or bad, because maybe it's not for you. And there are some people who are offended when something is not for them. I've had this with Apple stuff too, where people like went nuts when there was a piece of Apple hardware that was not like, I don't know, like a MacBook, like the MacBook. There's a good example where it's like, oh, this is ridiculous. It's so underpowered. And it's like, it's not for you. It's for someone else.
Right.
That's fine.
Exactly.
It doesn't. And Playdate strikes me like that. That was like, no,
yeah.
It's not another giant corporate console launch. It is an indie labor of love with hardware, which I think is awesome, because as John Syracuse said on ATP this week, basically they don't whimsical, adorable, video game hardware doesn't exist anymore because the amount of money you have to spend to develop hardware, it's only these big players. And Panic's like, we can spend that money.
Well, what's kind of fascinating about it is that I think it's a perception issue too, in terms of they are a established company that knows how to make products, even if this is their first attempt in the hardware. And what I feel like some people react weirdly, this is very strange, but I'm going to try to codify this. It's the fact that they're like, here's the product, here's how much it will cost, here's what it does. As opposed to, people would probably be less surprised by it if it's like, hey, here's a crowdfunded product that I'm hoping to build,
mm-hmm.
and promised all these things. Like, people get really hyped up about those things that even when you look at them, you're like, this is never going to happen. This person does not have the first clue how to produce this as an actual product, right? And it's funny because, like, I have no doubt that Panic is going to make these because
they've already made them, right? They've already made the prototypes. This is not a, because it's not crowdfunded. They're making them. They're making them now.
But people get, like, weirdly excited about crowdfunding things that will never happen.
You're right.
They're weirdly dismissive of things that will actually happen.
Yeah. 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 Well, that's part of the crowdfunding psychology. But you're right. You're right. And they're just, they have a plan. And they're, you know, there are things that they maybe need to communicate better. And I think that they've learned some lessons about it. But this was a reveal and they've never done it before. And I thought that if you read through what they're doing, you know, you get the gist of it. I saw a lot of people who didn't understand that there's, people are also so tied into, like, well, the way that corporate video game rollouts work is the way that corporate video is the way that games must work. And Panic is doing stuff that is not like that. Like, people were assuming that it was $150 to buy this thing. First off, it's also hilarious where the value people ascribe in things. And we found this out, like, with Macworld, where people, when we did the digital version, and they assumed that all they were paying for was paper and postage and that the content was free, which is not the case. where people are like, oh, this is dumb. I'd pay $20 for it. It's like, well, okay, first off.
This isn't an auction.
First off, how are you even judging what hardware costs? And then second, unlike all this other stuff, this thing is not just a piece of hardware. It's a piece of hardware that comes with a season of indie games from really great game developers, 12 games. So you're not just buying, and somebody did the math. They're like, okay, well, what if they charge $50 and then $20 per game? You know,
way more expensive.
Now, how much would you pay? But they're not doing that. They don't want to do that. They don't want to make you pick. They want you to have this experience, and you're really buying a piece of hardware and at least a guaranteed 12-week game a week experience. Plus, it'll be side loadable, and people are interested in making other games for it, and maybe it will be a platform that takes off in some other ways, and that's cool. Also, I love the fact that they wrote their own operating system. That's bananas.
Yeah,
but good for
crazy.
Them.
That to me is, you know, knowing, like, having heard what I've heard about Stephen Frank, that seems like a very Stephen Frank thing.
Yeah, and they wanted to do it. They spent 3 years, and they wanted to do custom hardware and build their own OS and provide different methods for developers to, you know, write their games. And they're, you know, we'll see where it goes. But the point is, it's not supposed to take over the world. And I love that about it. And if it turns out that they sell 10,000 of them or 50,000 of them, and there's a little indie game platform that is awesome, that is worth it for everyone involved, great. And if it's worth $150 to have a really fun game experience for 6 months or whatever, great. Like, that's all... You know, it doesn't need to be more than that.
Yeah.
And it looks
not
like
everything needs
really
to be the ultimate.
Yeah. Amazing piece of hardware. That's the other thing. It just looks like a fun object on top of that. By the way, anybody who's got an iPhone or an iPad, go to play.date, which is their website. And if you go to the press kit, you can tap on these two VR or AR 3D files. And you can get an augmented reality version of it and put it in your living room. It's pretty great.
That's pretty awesome.
All right. Well, next week, you're going to be around Friday? Or are you flying? When are you flying?
No, I'm flying on Saturday.
All right. So calendar will be appeased one last time.
Indeed.
Before WWDC. All right.
Thank God for it.
Praise calendar.
All praise.
Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.